Welcome to episode number 463 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. Come at you every Monday here on The Grizz. You can also follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. And for those of you listening on iTunes, if you have just a second, we really, really appreciate those five-star reviews. Helps to promote the show in the podcast section of iTunes. You know, this is a great time of year. You have the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship game tonight. And how about the news out of Georgetown? The Hoyas bringing back Patrick Ewing to be the head coach. Wow, big story there for Georgetown fans. Major League Baseball is back. Masters Week is here. And throw in some controversy on the LPGA Tour. And we have lots to talk about. Big show coming up here on episode 463 of the Sports Report. You can chime in on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Let's get right into the hoops here. I am really looking forward to tonight's NCAA championship game between Gonzaga and North Carolina. We got a pair of number one seeds in the final. Gonzaga has only lost once all season. The Tar Heels have 32 wins. I picked UNC before the tournament started, but, and this is a Fat Albert size but, if I'm a Carolina fan, and I know some big Tar Heels fans, I'm a little bit nervous about this matchup out in Phoenix tonight. UNC, clearly the more public team, right? You know, like the Yankees or the Cowboys, certain teams are public teams. It's a betting term. Carolina is a perennial powerhouse, blue blood program. Gonzaga does not play in a power conference. I mean, how many people even know where the school is located? It's out in Spokane, Washington. How many people know that? Having said that, have you seen the line for this game? It opened at North Carolina -1.5. That's it. 1.5. That tells me that the Zags are probably the side to take here. Why isn't that line bigger? You have to ask yourself that when you have a public team like North Carolina, all the history, all the tradition, Michael Jordan, James Worthy. What do we say on the show? Let the line lead the way. I would not be overly confident if I'm a fan of the Heels. And I picked them to cut the nets down before the tournament started. You know, I've liked this squad for a long, long time, and I like to be right. You have the balance in the backcourt with Barry and Jackson at guard. You have Meeks and Hicks inside. You have a versatile forward like Pinson. He can guard multiple positions. Roy Williams has won it all before. Been here, done that. I mean, there's a lot to like about North Carolina, but that line makes me nervous. Something that needs to be emphasized is this is not David versus Goliath, all right? The Zags and Coach Few, that's a very, very well-respected program. This isn't some little kid on the block going toe-to-toe with the big bad bully who had facial hair back in third grade. You know what I'm talking about, right? Every school had that kid. Hit puberty when he was like 4. Keep in mind, 3 of the Zags starters transferred from power conference schools. Nigel Williams-Goss was at Washington. He averaged 15 points a game there. He is the West Coast Conference Player of the Year. In the semis against South Carolina on Saturday, he had 23 points and 6 assists. Played really well in that game. Jordan Matthews transferred from Cal, and Jonathan Williams transferred from Missouri. And Williams and Matthews were both double-digit scorers at their previous schools before coming to Gonzaga. So don't be fooled into thinking that Gonzaga is a Cinderella story. We're talking about a 37-1 number one seed that beat Arizona, Florida, and Iowa State early on in the regular season. They played some big boys, and they beat them. The Zags are no lightweight here. We should not get this twisted. These guys can play. One thing I am pumped to see is actual big men going at each other down low. You know, all we hear about anymore is small ball and three-guard lineups and stretch fours. Nobody wants to play inside anymore. Nobody wants to play with their back to the basket. Everybody wants to shoot threes. Well, in North Carolina and Gonzaga, we have two teams that can pound the glass here and can really hurt you inside. You're going to see some big boys going at it tonight in Arizona. Karnowski is 7'1", 300 pounds. Now, he's a great passer for his size. He also has very good touch around the basket for somebody that big. He only played 25 minutes against South Carolina. He had 4 fouls in the game, 13 points, 5 rebounds. He must stay out of foul trouble. That is a big key. Zach Collins is a very highly touted freshman off the bench. He's about 7 feet. Some project him as a lottery pick, and he was brilliant in the semifinals. 14 points, 13 rebounds, and 6 blocks. I mean, that's like a Dikembe Mutombo type of line right there. Talking about former Hoyas like Patrick Ewing. I mean, this kid, Collins, did it all for Gonzaga. And Carolina counters with Kennedy Meeks, 6'10", 260 pounds. Isaiah Hicks, 6'9", 245. Meeks can look unstoppable at times. Against Oregon Saturday night, 25 points, 14 rebounds. And he was almost perfect from the field. He was 11 of 13 from the field. 8 of his boards on the offensive side. And that is something nobody does better than North Carolina. They average 16 offensive rebounds per game. They are plus 13 in rebounding margin. They get a lot of second, third chance opportunities. And you saw at the end of that win over Oregon, 77-76, the Ducks could not even secure a rebound off a missed free throw. Meeks and Pinson were able to sneak in there, come up large in the final seconds, and get extra possessions. I mean, how frustrating was that ending if you're an Oregon fan? Gee, can't even get the rebound to get a shot. So you absolutely must box out if you're Gonzaga. Cannot play a finesse game. And remember, Gonzaga, although they won, did allow South Carolina to get 13 offensive rebounds. And North Carolina likes to feast on the offensive glass. Frank Martin and his Gamecocks were an awesome story. Really were. I give them all the credit in the world. Nobody had South Carolina in the Final Four when the brackets came out. But North Carolina is a much better team. This is a different animal that's coming at Gonzaga. Another focal point for me is North Carolina point guard Joel Berry. The junior's playing on 2 bum ankles. He has not had a great tournament. 2 of 14 against Oregon, 4 of 12 against Kentucky, 2 of 13 against Arkansas, 1 of 8 against Texas Southern. All right, you get the picture. He's only had one great game, and that was against Butler in the Sweet 16 when he went for 26. If he's hobbled, he can't make shots, he can't create because he's really quick. That is a major concern for North Carolina. Fortunately for Roy Williams, he also has Justin Jackson, who is the ACC Player of the Year. And he had 22 and knocked down 4 threes against Oregon. He's 6'8", long arms, very rangy player. So as for my pick, I'm sticking with the Tar Heels. I can't change my mind now. I had them back in the regular season, had them when the brackets came out. Not going to change now. However, this line tells me this is going to be a tight game and could come down to the wire. And I would love that. I mean, how awesome was last year with Villanova and North Carolina? So I'm going to stick with the Heels. Who do you like? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. Much more to come here on episode number 463 of the Sports Report. We'll talk some women's hoops. How about that upset with UConn? Oh my goodness, Friday night. Everybody on Twitter and social media was chiming in about that game. My Major League Baseball predictions coming up, Paul's perfect picks, and a bizarre story from the LPGA. First, I want to tell you about our great sponsor, and that is iHome. iHome has introduced its Zenergy line of products. They feature sound and light therapy technology to help you fall asleep and wake up energized and ready to go. And that's something that is important to all of us. We lead very busy lives, need to get some Z's. These new iHome products have soothing sounds from nature and white noise sound that's designed to help your mind and your body relax. They also include specially designed light therapy programs to promote sleep and increase your energy during the day. Dr. Michael Bruce, who's known as the sleep doctor, recommends these new iHome products, and he's the most trusted authority on sleep in the nation. So go to iHomeAudio.com, take a look at the Zenergy line of products, like the bedside sleep therapy machine and the portable sleep therapy speaker. That website again, iHomeAudio.com. Back on episode 463 of the Sports Report. We're in the podcast section of iTunes. New shows every Monday, also on grizzlyproductions.tv. Quick shout out to Dawn Staley and the South Carolina women's team. They won their first national title Sunday night. They beat Mississippi State 67-55 in Dallas. Asia Wilson led the way, 23 points. Staley, who's from Philadelphia, finally able to come out on top in the tournament. She made the Final Four three times as a player at Virginia, never won. She guided South Carolina to the semis 2 years ago, but lost to Notre Dame. So this time, she got to hoist the trophy. Very emotional scene for South Carolina. And they won it without their star center, who was injured in the SEC tournament. Of course, I have to mention UConn. I've always said the beauty of sports is there's no script. Mississippi State played the Huskies last year and lost by 60 in the NCAA tournament. 6-0. Not 6 or 16, not even 26. 60. So Friday night, who in their right mind is picking Mississippi State? But there's no script. We think we know a lot of times, but we never know for sure. Friday night with Dak Prescott going nuts in the stands. How funny was that? I mean, that was quite a sideshow there. He was just bonkers. But the Bulldogs shocked UConn in overtime, 66-64, on a last-second jumper by 5'5", Morgan Williams. The smallest player on the court at 5'5", and she nails the game-winning jumper. She had 41 against Baylor in the regional final, proving important for kids to know, size isn't everything. For the life of me, I have no clue, zero clue why UConn did not hold for the last shot. I mean, somebody needs to help me out with this. It was tied at 64. You have the basketball. You must take the last shot. That's it. Instead, they drive. It's an awkward shot with 12 seconds to go. What? That made no sense. And we all know how good of a coach Gino Auriemma is. He's a Chester guy, Southeast Pennsylvania. Time, score, situation. Young players just don't seem to pay attention to it anymore. I don't know if it's all the AAU ball and you just roll the basketball out there and let them play. You're not teaching as much, but time, score, situation. You have to hold for the last shot. So UConn loses. The streak is over. 111 consecutive wins. Unreal. I was in awe. I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. And that's why I love sports so much. The unknown, the competition, the passion, the work ethic. I think more people are going to remember that game than they are the national championship game. Don't you? I mean, that was an epic upset. That was one of the biggest upsets of all time. I think UConn was favored by 19 points, something like that. And the money line was huge. Was huge. If you had the guts to take Mississippi State, congratulations. You're smiling from ear to ear right now. This is episode 463 of the Sports Report. You can weigh in on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Agree, disagree. Everybody's welcome on Twitter at the Sports RPT. On to Major League Baseball. Regular season is here. Baseball's back. It's a fresh start for every team. Hope for fans all across the country. Opening day. Beautiful thing to me. I still check the box scores out in the newspaper every morning. And I understand, especially with the younger generation out there, the millennials out there, that maybe baseball just isn't fast enough to keep your attention. Maybe there's not enough action for you. I will always be a fan. Always. And I should mention, as we get ready for some predictions here, last year I picked the Cubs to finally win it all. And they did. First World Series championship since 1908. How about them apples? Now, I'm not going to take credit because most people really, really liked Chicago last year. And the Cubs are built for the long haul. I mean, this franchise is not going anywhere. Chicago is loaded with young talent. The question is, can the Cubs repeat? No team has done it since the Yankees. They won three in a row from 98 to 2000. So it's tough to do. Let's dive right into another edition of Paul's Perfect Picks. And if you believe these are going to be perfect, you really should have your head examined ASAP. Do not collect 200. Do not pass go. Go straight to the doctor. No surprise in the NL Central. I have to stick with the Cubs. Kyle Schwarber is back. He's healthy for a squad that won 103 games. The rotation has a lot of experience there. Wade Davis is the new closer. He was really good in Kansas City. And you've got Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, Russell, Schwarber, Baez. Plus, Hayward has to be better. He hit 230 last year, seven homers. His OPS was 631. He was horrendous. And everybody likes Joe Maddon, likable manager. I gotta like the Cubs. In the East, give me Washington over New York. Vegas thinks this is going to be a tight race. Looking at the over-under win totals, they have Washington at 90.5 and the Mets at 89.5. Really, really close. The health of Harvey and Mats, the young left-hander, that's a concern for the Mets because the rotation is the key there. And Harvey's velocity was down this spring. Last year, he didn't look anything like the 2015 version of Matt Harvey. So that's another reason I go Washington. I also like the Nats lineup better with Harper and Murphy, Worth, Rendon, Zimmerman. They have the young buck Turner at shortstop. They really like him. Ian Desmond has moved on. He's now in Colorado. Colorado's going to hit. I don't know how much you're going to pitch, but they're going to hit. And then you have the new center fielder, Adam Eaton, now with Washington. He's one of those guys that the analytics folks absolutely love. Pitching, you have Scherzer, you have Strasburg, you have Roark, who I thought was really underrated last year. Back end of the bullpen is unknown, but there's a lot of talent in D.C. Will the Mets get enough offense outside of Cespedes? That remains a question mark. National League West, I go Dodgers over the Giants, but you can't ever count out San Francisco. A couple teams you can't count out. San Francisco, St. Louis. And St. Louis now has Dexter Fowler. He comes over from the Cubs. I mean, these are very, very well-run organizations. Consistent winners. do it the right way with scouting, player development. How about Madison Bumgarner, by the way, in the Giants' first game? He hits not one, but two home runs. And they still lost. I mean, that guy's a stud. Country strong, Bumgarner. Clayton Kershaw, also a stud. You know, behind him, L.A. has Kenta Maeda and Rich Hill. Offensively, Corey Seager's a big-time shortstop. I like their offense. I don't love the Dodgers' offense. Kenley Jansen, the big guy, back into the bullpen, was close to 50 saves last year, so you feel good about him. Giants have a veteran staff. Bumgarner, Cueto, Samardzija, who's going to get you innings. You've got Moore. You've got Kane, who has gone from a number one to a number five. He has really, really struggled the last 2 years. It's a veteran lineup with Posey and Crawford, Pence, Belt, Span. Melanson takes over as the closer, and he blew his first opportunity. He used to be with the Pirates, but it's a long season, and he was good in Pittsburgh. So I'll go Dodgers there, but you could make a case for the Giants. To the American League, in the East, everybody loves Boston. A Big Poppy retired. He still had a great year last season. Chris Sale comes over for Chicago, and this guy is nasty. He has this awkward delivery, comes from the side, just filthy stuff. And you still have Porcello, who is 22-4. Now, David Price is in wait-and-see mode. Hopefully he's okay. And there's no doubt the Red Sox are going to score runs. You have Pedroia, Ramirez, Betts, Bogart, Bradley Jr. Boston went from 78 wins to 93 last year. Orioles and Jays may step back slightly. You know, I'm not saying collapse here. I just think, you know, maybe a slight step back. Baltimore's rotation continues to be a question for me, and we all know they can hit. Do they have enough starting pitching? You like the lineup. You like the bullpen for sure. But what about the starters? That's the recurring theme in the Charm City of Baltimore. And for Toronto, you lose Edwin Encarnacion. And is Jay Happ going to go 20-4 again? I think that's a valid question. Yankees are in rebuild mode. I'm a Yankees fan. Blame my dad if you don't like that. But I'm cool with the rebuild. I think it was long overdue. I mean, you go back to their incredible run. It was a lot of homegrown talent there. You know, Jeter, Posada, Pettit. Guys that came through their system. In the Central, Cleveland is the clear front runner after getting to the World Series and adding a slugger in Encarnacion. Plus, Michael Brantley, and I mentioned this, but I think some people forget it. He only played in 11 games in 2016. And the Indians still went 94-67. They were plus 13 in the win column. We all saw what the lefty Andrew Miller can do in the pen. Cleveland's rotation is very deep. Hopefully they stay healthy. Kipnis at second is going to start on the DL, but he should not be out long. I love Lindor at shortstop. I do think Detroit will be a factor in the Central. Jordan Zimmermann must bounce back, plain and simple. If he does, the Tigers will contend. Out West, you have the Rangers, Astros, and Mariners. You have a nice trio there of teams that are all solid. Seattle is a sleeper to some, but the Mariners did win 86 games last year. And good luck to opposing pitchers dealing with Cano and Cruz in the middle of that lineup. I wonder if there's enough surrounding that duo. Iwakuma was just average last year, an ERA slightly over 4, 218 hits, 199 innings. That's too high. He's their number two starter after King Felix. I'm a big, big fan of Hamels and Darvish at the top of the Rangers staff. But then what is there? And I feel like we've been talking about this a lot with Texas Rangers. Nobody I really love. Texas, another American League team that can rake. I mean, they can mash. They can play beer league softball. They led the American League with 95 wins last year. You know, people talking about Boston and Cleveland. The over-under this year is 86.5, which makes me hit pause just for a second there. Vegas not as high on the Rangers as I thought. Carlos Beltran, I mean, how old is this guy? He signed with Houston. The Astros are going to go as far as Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers take them. I mean, that's what it's about. Keuchel goes from 20 wins to 9. He goes from an ERA of 2.5 to 4.5. McCullers is unproven. So I will pick Texas out west. People really, really like Houston. Keuchel better be better. A recap of division winners, American League, Red Sox, Indians, Rangers, National League, Nationals, Cubs, Dodgers, my AL wildcard teams, Tigers, and Astros, although I don't feel as good about Houston as some, NL wildcard teams, Giants, and the Mets, and I feel bad about leaving out the Cardinals, and they'll probably prove me wrong. American League Championship Series, let's get down to it here. Final Four, ALCS, I'll take the Red Sox over the Indians. Need Price to be healthy. Need Kimbrel to cut down his walks. He had 30 in 53 innings. Can't have your closer putting everybody on base. Got to get rid of those free passes. NLCS, Cubs beat the Nationals. So my Final Four again, Red Sox over the Indians, Cubs beat the Nats. World Series, I will take the Red Sox over the Chicago Cubs, proving yet again I'm the king of objectivity and captain of reality because I hate the Red Sox. As a lifelong Yankees fan, I do not feel good about picking Boston. But I got to be honest with you, look in the mirror. So I'm going to go Red Sox over the Cubs. It's hard to repeat. Is the motivation, the desire at the same level as it was last year for the Cubs? Plus, I'm a big Chris Sale fan. He's been stuck on some bad teams with the White Sox. And how about that for a storyline in the Windy City? The former White Sox pitcher beats the Cubs in the World Series. That would be awesome for Chicago. I'm not looking to make wild picks here or just to stick out. I don't do that. Over 162 games, the cream is going to rise to the top. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You're not going to be fooling people when you play this many games. I don't see a lot of Cinderella stories. I don't see a lot of out-of-nowhere stories in 2017. So my pick again, Red Sox over the Cubs. Last year I gave you the Cubs, and I got it right. Not too shabby. I also was only a game off on the Phillies, which is the team in my neck of the woods, the team that my radio station has carried for many, many years. Last year I was only off by one game. I said they would win 70. They won 71. So I was pretty close. This year I'm going to say 72 for the Phillies. The over-under is 73.5, so I'll just go a little bit under there for the listeners in the city of brotherly love. This is episode 463 of the Sports Report Podcast. Speaking of brotherly love, how about a nice 5-star review in the podcast section of iTunes? I would appreciate that. You can also listen on The Grizz, grizzlyproductions.tv, with you every Monday on Twitter. Send me your predictions for the MLB season. Who do you like? Your division champs, wild card teams, your World Series prediction. Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Baseball is back. Don't wait until, you know, July and then tell me, oh, I told you so, Paul. I knew this was going to happen. I want to get those predictions now on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Finally, some golf here. Alexi Thompson got a 4-shot penalty and lost a major after a television viewer tipped off the LPGA this weekend at the Edina Shore course out in Rancho Mirage, California. This is the first major of the year for the ladies. Crazy, crazy story. A TV viewer's email alerted officials to a day-old rules violation by Lexi Thompson for a one-inch ball placement error. Her three-shot lead was wiped out by a four-shot penalty. I mean, she thinks she's going to win a major here. She asked the official, is this a joke? It wasn't. And she wasn't informed until the 13th hole on Sunday. She was on her way to the 13th tee. That's when she found out. She was just blindsided, as you can imagine, because the infraction happened 24 hours earlier. It was on Saturday. She marked a one-foot putt with a coin, which everybody does. She was on the 17th green. This was the third round. She replaced the ball, but she replaced it about 1 inch out of position. I mean, that's it. So they look at the video over and over and over again, and they penalized her two strokes for incorrect ball placement, but that's not it. They also penalized her two strokes for an incorrect scorecard. Now, at the time, see, I think that's really bogus, because at the time, there was no penalty, so she didn't know that she was signing an incorrect scorecard. She wasn't informed that she'd done anything wrong. So they get the double whammy there. It's a four-shot penalty. She fought back tears after getting the news from the officials. She wound up losing in a playoff. And who comes to her defense on Twitter? How about Tiger Woods? Not playing in the Masters, which is kind of a bummer. But on Twitter, Tiger said, quote, viewers at home should not be officials wearing stripes. And I agree with Tiger. Now, Thompson's only 22, so she has a very, very bright future. And a lot of fans were supporting her. She battled back after the penalty, forced a playoff. But I can't imagine what was going through her mind. I can't imagine playing after you're informed, oh yeah, your three-shot lead is gone. Four-shot penalty. But she hung in there. Just a very, very bizarre situation. I just don't know. If you watch on TV, like, what type of person is actually going to alert the LPGA? You know, I mean, they have officials on the course, right? If they don't see it, then that's that. I mean, you know, I don't want Joe Schmo, you know, in his parents' basement eating Cheetos, just glued to the TV screen and emailing the LPGA with infractions or penalties. I mean, come on. Let the LPGA handle it. Not some guy on his couch watching golf. So I thought that was strange. I am looking forward to the Masters. A buddy of mine is down there. One of my coworkers is down there for the practice rounds. He's down there right now. And he's picking Dustin Johnson. Said it's tough to go against him with the way he's playing right now. Who knows? I mean, there's a really good group, good crop of young golfers right now. You have Day, you have Spieth, so many really good young players. Yeah, you can probably toss five of them in a hat, pick one out. You never know what's going to happen. But looking forward to the Masters at the end of the week. Got hoops tonight, the national championship game. And you know I'm a college basketball junkie. Can't wait for that. Carolina and Gonzaga. Baseball is here. No more spring training. It's back. Warmer temperatures around the corner. Loving that. And the Masters. So a fun time. Let me know what you think about the topics today on Twitter at the Sports RPT. On Twitter at the Sports RPT. Have a great week, everybody. I'll talk to you again next Monday. This has been episode number 463 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv and iTunes.